Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Rick Rozoff. Rick is an activist, an anti-war supporter, and he's editor of a very important website I urge listeners to follow on a daily basis. It's called Stop NATO. Rick does extraordinary work, his own writing, important things he posts. He lets you know what NATO really is all about. It has nothing to do with defense. It's all about offense. It's all about imperial wars. You know the way they work. They rage one after another or in multiples, and they're certainly raging right now. Stop NATO, again, is a very, very vital site. Again, NATO is an imperial war machine. If people don't understand what it's doing and the harm it causes, it'll just keep causing more. It's, my God, I mean, it began post-World War II, dare I say, a modest basis. It was never modest. Now it wants to control the world. That's the scheme. And, of course, it's led by Washington. What else? We really should call it Stop Washington-Led NATO. Rick, I think that's a more accurate description.
Yeah, right you are, and thank you for the kind words, Stephen.
Oh, so much going on, Rick. I'm not certain what's on your mind, but I've written three articles on Israel's latest act of aggression. Make no mistake. I mean, Israel, I wrote an article today that it's official Israeli policy. I'm doing another article I'll get out tomorrow on the same topic, a follow-up article, one leading from the other. What are your thoughts on what's going on? I'm wondering, what on earth is Israel up to? The idea that they would attack a convoy, that Assad, the head of Syria, would be sending arms and munitions cross-border into Lebanon. My God, I mean, that sounds like sending coals to Newcastle. I mean, Assad needs arms and munitions.
Why on earth
would he have a convoy heading cross-border into Lebanon? Does that pretty much register with you that way?
You know, I have your article in front of me right now, as a matter of fact, and I commend you for it. It's called Premeditated Aggression, Official Israeli Policy, in which, you know, you trace a history of such incidents, you know, previous bombing attack against Syria. 6 years ago, the attacks against Sudan, against Iran, this, you know, bombing at will, apparently, throughout the Middle East. But you're right, this is an absolutely ludicrous contention. It's absurd on the face of it that a government as besieged as is that of, you know, of Syria currently by any number of extremist forces armed and supported by NATO nations, the U.S. included, and the Gulf monarchies and sheikdoms like Qatar and the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia and so forth would be shipping arms outside the country, defies logic and is, you know, apparently both Israel and the United States, which supports the Israeli version of events, incidentally, as opposed to that of Syria, which has been echoed, you know, in the press in nations like Russia and China, for example, that what in fact was bombed by Israeli warplanes was a military research center outside the capital city of Damascus, which seems a much more likely scenario. But that, you know, the first one, the first claim that a convoy of missiles going into Lebanon, you know, was bombed by Israeli warplanes is I don't think to be taken seriously, but it does indicate the fact that it's being echoed, parroted by the United States, by the State Department, and the White House, you know, suggest, you know, what utter contempt the American and Israeli governments evidently have for the people of their own countries, as well as the world, if they would put out a canard like that.
Oh, indeed, Ricky. The only thing that makes sense to me is that Israel and America both are notorious for staging false flags. The way to entrap a country into to create a pretext for a war that they want. And the only thing that registers with me, whether this in fact is what the scheme is, the notion of attacking or provoking Syria, doing something to provoke Syria. Obama has said that if Syria is dangerously moving chemical weapons, which it is not doing, or if it uses chemical weapons, which it absolutely will not do internally against its own people or against another country, absolutely won't happen. But there are reports and hints that maybe there'll be a false flag where chemical weapons will be used, initiated either by Israel, Washington, Qatar, another Gulf state, a NATO state, blamed falsely on Assad as a pretext for NATO and Washington and maybe Israel to get overtly involved in this war. And the other thing on my mind is literally a provocative act like Israel's attack to provoke Syria to respond, and as a pretext, and how they'll spin this, I guess to figure this out in advance, but how they would spin this to justify the idea of Washington and NATO getting involved could very well happen. I mean, that could be what this is all about, a deliberate provocation to get America more deeply involved when Obama has said, well, you know, we really don't want to do this. But in fact, maybe they really do want to do it, but they need a casus belli to get involved. Maybe that's what's going on. We'll have to watch and see.
No, you're raising vital points there, Stephen, on two scores. You know, as I think you're implying, the airstrike by Israel in the last 48 hours is analogous in many ways to the Turkish warplane that, violated Syrian airspace last summer and was shot down. And, you know, that time, both of us, I know, and I'm sure a number of other people, you know, suggest that this was not only testing the air defenses of Syria, but it was perhaps trying to provoke an overreaction on behalf of the Syrian government, which then could be used as the very casus belli you're referring to. And this could, you know, well be the case with the unprovoked and criminal Israeli attack against Syria, presuming that it was, in fact, an attack against a military research facility that killed at least two people and wounded several others. As such, it is, as you know, you indicate in your article, what the Russian Foreign Ministry denounced as a flagrant violation of international law. It is, of course, that. But Israel being backed by the United States, it can, violate international law at will. The other point I think you were alluding to was there are other provocations against Syria, of course, and within just the last couple of days, we've seen the finalization of the stationing and operationalization, if you will, of the six Patriot Advanced Capability 3 interceptor missile batteries in southeastern Turkey, aimed squarely at Syria, also at Iran, of course. But these provocations are such that if the U.S. U.S. deployed two of those six Patriot batteries, with two respectively from the Netherlands and Germany, but if the U.S. can deploy missiles, interceptor missiles, on behalf of a NATO ally like Turkey, imagine what it will be emboldened to do if it's ostensibly in support of, its number one ally in the world, Israel.
Oh, it really is. And, Israel can do no wrong, Rick. It really is disgusting. I write more about Israel-Palestine than any other topic by far, and there'll be another article on this issue coming out tomorrow. Same story. Israel's provocation with more information in it, and it simply doesn't matter what Israel does. It operates with impunity. And I would say this too, that anything, any event of any significance that goes on in the region, especially a belligerent one, you can bet, and it's a safe bet that's very easy to win, that Washington and Israel are partnered in it. I think whatever Israel did and whatever they plan to do, this is a joint U.S.-Israeli operation, Rick, and American could be behind the scenes, but the planning goes on together. A lot of the munitions or weapons can come from America. When there's a major, during the Lebanon War in 2006, when Israel was just pummeling Gaza or pummeling Lebanon, and they began running short of certain munitions they wanted, Washington made an emergency shipment to them. So, you know, this is all planned out, as you know and you write about. And again, it's very ugly stuff. And the victims get blamed for the crimes of the aggressor. No, the crimes are bad enough, but when you blame the victims for the aggressor crimes, and too many people don't realize that, my God, that really sticks in my craw.
Yes, I mean, that's adding another degree of criminality to it when you hold up those who've been victimized and try to portray them as the provokers or the initiators of the aggression. That's being mean-spirited, even according to the lowest of standards, I suppose. But we're constantly seeing some essentially defenseless country held up as a threat to world peace. And by the way, this is exactly the expression used by the United States when they introduce punitive sanctions or resolutions in the United Nations Security Council, you know, against countries around the world, again, comparatively small and defenseless nations, are, you know, identified as being a threat to U.S. national security interest and to world peace. You know, we could be talking about nations, you know, over the last 15 years or so, like Yugoslavia, Afghanistan, Iraq, Ivory Coast, Mali, you know, nations that, you know, in any sensible and sane world, to suggest any such nation was a threat to anybody, you know, much less to U.S. national security or world peace, would be a, you know, not only hyperbolical but bizarre claim. But this routinely, these sorts of statements are routinely issued by, you know, none more so than by gratefully outgoing Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who we may recall 2 years ago in 2011 ordered no fewer than four standing heads of state to step down and leave office, you know, in Libya and Syria, in Yemen, and in Ivory Coast. I mean, this is unparalleled in history, that any foreign minister, you know, plenipotentiary of the world empire would, you know, quite at random, you know, point her forefinger at heads of state and tell them to get out or else. And of course, we know one of them, you know, Laurent Gbagbo, the president of Ivory Coast, was brutalized and is incarcerated 2 days after Ms. Clinton arrived in Benghazi to initiate the manhunt. You know, Muammar Gaddafi was hunted down, brutally assaulted, and is brutally murdered. And this is what passes for civilization and you know, Atlantic values.
Yeah, sure thing, Rick. And Hillary Clinton's infamous statement about, forget the precise words, but, you know, we came, we saw, he died, something mm-hmm. like that. I mean, what an unconscionable thing to say. I mean, back in World War II, if they found Hitler before he took his own life, if that's what actually happened, and somebody made a statement like that, it would have been unconscionable about a man, about the real Hitler, not the fake Hitlers that they haul out whenever they want. But this is just good outrageous point. Stuff. Human life has value. Every human life has value. Doesn't matter whether it's a despot or somebody else. There's something called the rule of law, Rick. America doesn't seem to pay very much attention to it. Certainly its top officials pay the least attention to it. But it matters. Rule of law is there. All rules of law are there for a specific purpose. And if they're not obeyed, then, you know, the only other law is the law of the jungle. You do what you damn please, and that's the way America governs. And people like Hillary Clinton, I think she's one of, she may be the worst Secretary of State America ever had. It's hard to tell. There have been so many abominable ones. It's a rogues gallery. It's hard deciding which one was worse than any other. Was she as bad or worse than Condoleezza Rice? Oh, my goodness. I mean...
No, you put that very well. You put that well altogether. I mean, the competition is stiff, though she might be the front runner. However, when she reinvents herself as the, you know, common phrases in the entertainment industry, at least in the United States, you know, and is pushed forward as a presidential candidate 3 years from now, and we will see, Stephen, you can, you know, stake your life on it, that, you know, any number of erstwhile so-called liberal left, you know, activists and so forth will fulsomely endorse, wholeheartedly endorse her candidacy and work for it and so forth. And but yeah, I mean, the competition has been particularly stiff of late. I mean, we have to, you know, hark back to, say, Henry Kissinger in the late 60s and early 70s to conjure up something as, you know, someone or something, you know, as horrendous as Ms. Clinton. But we also have had, of course, Madeleine Albright and Condoleezza Rice in the interim as well. You know, if I were a betting man, I would say Ms. Clinton wins on this one. She has been more undiplomatic, more brash, more arrogant, more bellicose than even the other ones we mentioned, bad as they are.
Rick, the ones that bother me the most are the ones who pose or who people assume are more liberal, where they're really just as bad as the worst extremist right-wingers, and certainly Clinton is in that category. Obama is in that category. I had a mini-debate with one of my readers making the very point that you did, talking about Hillary being a presidential candidate in 2016, and how wonderful it would be if we had somebody on the progressive left actually really become President of the United States. And we shot a few emails back and forth, and I was polite but very pointed, saying, I simply can't imagine a worse Secretary of State than Hillary Clinton, and I can't imagine anybody. If Hillary Clinton becomes President in 2016, I think Obama right now is a good candidate for America's worst ever president, because he's getting away with stuff George Bush never would have tried, and people, after all the harm he's done, they still think he's a good guy, especially so-called people who call themselves Democrats. Republicans hate him because they're Republicans, because that's the party line. But it's astonishing, after all this harm he's caused, he still has half the country buffaloed. And again, he did things that Bush couldn't have done, that he didn't do. And I guarantee Clinton or anybody else who becomes president in 2016 will exceed the worst of Obama, unless it turns out to be somebody roguish and in your face like George Bush, who'll be hated much more quickly. But they'll be more clever than that. They'll pick somebody that can continue buffaloing the U.S. public. I just wonder whether humanity can survive another 4 years of Obama, Rick. That's what's on my mind.
Yeah, well, you're right about that. You know, for the diehard defenders, and some have been hoodwinked, and some are perfectly conscious of what they're doing, of course. You know, of any occupant of the Oval Office of the White House who happens to have, a donkey logo on his lapel as opposed to an elephant one, there appears to be no crime you can commit that would disabuse people of that, fond... adoration practically of such people. The same with Clinton, by the way, who is, if anything, more admired by his legion of devotees than he was when he was in office. And the same with Obama. You know, I suppose it's the same for the Republican Party loyalist and diehard fanatics and so forth. But we're talking in this instance, of course, of a Democratic administration. You're absolutely accurate in saying that if it had been a Republican candidate who had killed, over 3,000 civilians in northwest Pakistan in drone strikes, or had, been killing hundreds upon hundreds in Yemen and Somalia and Libya with drone strikes, and was actively, participating in the French war in Mali currently, and on and on and on, there'd be mass demonstrations in the street. But the nefarious beauty of the whole thing, as you allude to, is the fact that all the power structure need do is put a Democrat in after an unpopular Republican, and indeed he can get away with blue murder, without any effective opposition. And that's the game plan, evidently. They just, regime rotation, as I heard somebody describe it right after Obama came into office in 2009.
Oh, indeed so, and I guess Obama will finish out term two. Then maybe it's time to rotate back to a Republican, whoever it might be. Or maybe Hillary will get it. It depends on who they think will be most reliable to carry the banner of the empire. Rick, I remember, it's been a good long while, I remember writing about Bill Clinton's approval rating either when he left office or reasonably close to when he did. And after all the harm he caused, the high approval rating that he had, and it's been too long, I don't remember what it was, it could have been 65% or something like that. And people forget, or they never really realized in the first place, maybe the worst, his dismantling and destruction of Yugoslavia, it wasn't just 78 days in 1999, it was the Balkan Wars throughout the entire decade. I mean, literally destroying a country. The word Balkanization, of course, comes from what he was involved in. But probably the worst thing he did, wasn't an overt war, but it was war by other means. The sanctions on Iraqi civilians, where people like Dennis Halliday, the UN humanitarian coordinator, resigned because he said he wanted no part of genocide. His word. No part of genocide. Mm-hmm. And he defined what he meant by genocide. It meant killing 5,000 Iraqi children every single month. Every single month. And you add up the numbers, and they've all been faked. But the real numbers are probably on the order of 1.5 million people. That's the dirty blood on Bill Clinton's hands. Nobody ever laid a glove on him.
No, you're correct about that. And we have to recall that he was the first, of course, U.S. president in the post-Cold War period. So, you know, and this would have been true, of course, with anyone who had won the election in 1992 from either party. But in fact, it was Clinton. And, you know, he served for 8 years during the transition period from a bipolar world to the unipolar world that, you know, Mr. Obama brags about, you know, on the occasion of his receiving the Nobel Peace Prize, incidentally, you know, as being the world's sole military superpower. That's how the, you know, the commander-in-chief of the U.S. Armed Forces, Mr. Obama, characterizes his country proudly. But, you know, it was the Clinton administration that saw the transition, of course. And during his 8 years, you know, arguably he bombed or otherwise, you know, participated in acts of military aggression in more countries, at least in peacetime, than any other president I'm acquainted with. You know, he launched cruise missile attacks and bomb almost daily bombings in Iraq, but in Somalia, Iraq, Bosnian Serb Republic, Yugoslavia, Somalia, I mentioned, Afghanistan, Sudan. You know, he was on a bombing blitz, but that, again, did not disillusion, you know, the 65% you remark, which is probably a higher percentage now that, you know, sees him as politically and morally, you know, some example of, you know, of American leadership and so forth. You know, just monstrous. You know, you talked about Iraq. In, you know, December of 1998, you know, and there's not a sane person in the world, I think, who would contest the fact that immediately before the beginning of impeachment proceedings in the U.S. Congress, that Mr. Clinton and his colleague, Mr. Blair, launched blistering cruise missile attacks inside Iraq, what was called Operation Desert Fox, you know, presumably in honor of Rommel, you know, whose moniker that was, and, you know, launched somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 and more cruise missiles inside Iraq right on the eve of the beginning of the impeachment proceedings in the U.S. Congress to deflect attention from them, I'm certain. And killed God knows how many innocent Iraqis into the bargain, but that's not enough to, you know, to have him viewed as what he is, which is a war criminal and a sociopath.
Oh, indeed so, and it's easy for people to forget that during the 1990s, there were no fly zones established over Iraq, the Kurdish North. I guess the Kurdish North, but it was a pretty broad area, and I do remember Clinton's missile campaign against Saddam, and of course they do it all for political advantages, as you say, Rick, and this stuff goes on. It goes on under the radar. Very little coverage in the U.S. media. Most people know nothing about it, and those who remember anything have forgotten by now, and these are aggressive acts of war, literally provocative acts. One of my articles for tomorrow I call my follow-up article on Israel attacking Syria. This one I take aim at Ban Ki-moon. I've taken aim at him a number of times, and sometimes I change my title, but the title I've got right now is Ban Ki-moon fails to condemn Israeli aggression. For initially he said nothing. He said nothing. The attack happened. He was silent, and then his usual comment is, "We urge both sides to show restraint."
Yeah, I know. Yeah, the victim and the victimizer should equally show restraint. And you know, we've had a discussion along these lines before, Stephen. But you know, Ban Ki-moon is Kofi Annan too. You know, who because of a, you know, just heavy-handed bit of bullying by Madeleine Albright, Richard Holbrooke and company in 1996 that deposed Boutros-Ghali, who was then Secretary General of the United Nations, and who, you know, by rights was entitled to a second term, but because he wasn't complacent enough in terms of, you know, Israeli bombing and in Lebanon, the massacre at Qana, and because he wouldn't authorize, you know, the United Nations, or he wouldn't give UN authorization NATO bombing in Bosnia, was decided, you know, he wasn't pliant enough for the United States, so he was deposed, even though, by all accounts, at the time, in 1996, 14 out of 15 members of the Security Council backed his second term, but, you know, Albright showed what the world's sole military superpower is about, you know, by strong-arming the other 14 countries into submission and planting their personal puppet, Mr. Annan, And then have now replaced him with an equally, obsequious stooge, Ban Ki-moon. And it's really an indictment against the world community. They tolerate the implantation of these, American yes-men and, do not take issue with, incidents like what you described, where, you could only imagine if, Syria would launch a mortar shell, across the border into Jordan or something, Ban Ki-moon to be all over that.
Boy, he sure would. Quick comment about Iran, Rick. I'm looking at a Reuters story dated yesterday. U.S. calls Iran's plan to upgrade uranium work, centrifuge upgrade, a provocative step. Well, I have said this many times, quoted U.S. intelligence, 16 intelligence agencies. Annually, they say they can find no evidence whatever that Iran's program is other than peaceful. Doesn't mean they don't have a military program. We just can't find any information, any evidence to say they are. Well, that's good enough for me, Rick. Iran's nuclear program is peaceful, just like dozens of other countries, including regional ones, that have similar nuclear programs. They're commercial, or they use it for medical purposes. That's what Iran is doing. Iran is the only one beaten up on provocative stuff, and it goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah, their nuclear program is being assisted, in many ways overseen by Russia, which certainly then knows the true nature of the program, doesn't that? I mean, being, intimately involved with the program and so forth, and does not make statements like the provocative and lunatic ones coming out of Washington and Tel Aviv.
Well, indeed so. Indeed so. And it's on my mind all the time that there could be. There are war plans. There are U.S. war plans on the book to attack Iran. They've been on the books for a long time. Over time, they're revised, they're changed, they're updated. There never has been a war. And I've called the idea of America and or Israel. Israel will never attack Iran, at least without U.S. permission, ideally jointly with U.S., a joint U.S.-Israeli attack. But for Israel to go it alone, as a cowboy, I say the odds of that are virtually zero. I don't think Israel has ever done anything that major or anything approaching that major without at least an okay from America. It's usually pretty easy to get. It's not easy to get attacking Iran because that is a major provocation. Both countries, as you know, Rick, like to go after soft targets. Saddam was a walkover. Gaddafi was a walkover. Syria is no walkover, but they're into that up to their ears. And Iran is a strong country. Iran can fight back. And if Iran is attacked, there's only one word I can use to describe it, an act of madness. The entire region could become embroiled. It literally could become something greater than anybody may have in mind, or at least have in mind now. And I ask myself, is this what Washington really wants? I don't know what any individual in Washington wants, Rick, Obama or anybody else, but I think there is enough people in high places that absolutely don't want to go anywhere near this. And they have power and they have things to say. And I think maybe that's why there's been restraint on literally launching a war against Iran. And maybe it won't happen. And if it won't happen by America, for sure it won't happen by Israel. But who can tell?
No, you present a pretty convincing scenario. I would only add, though, the Israeli airstrike in Syria of 2 days ago, has to be seen in one sense at least as a potential warning or threat to Iran. In so many words, as done in Syria, so it could be done in Iran. Though you're correct, this is order of magnitude almost infinitely larger, and it would entail a conflagration not only throughout the Persian Gulf region, not only throughout the Middle East, but arguably one the flames of which would fan into the South Caucasus, inevitably bring in Russia and other powers. So one would have to be insane. I suspect that what the Western powers and Israel intend to do is continued covert operations, cyber warfare, continued cyber warfare against Iran, color revolution scenarios when applicable and so forth, but always reserving the right for brash and provocative but nevertheless military actions.
Rick, I feel the same way. We've got about a minute left. Let me give it to you for any final thoughts.
Yeah, I want to thank you primarily, you know, for the opportunity of allowing someone to speak on these vital issues in the United States. You're aware, Stephen, that, you know, people like ourselves have precious little opportunity, even in the so-called alternative media or you know, campus you know, radio stations and so forth. And, you know, though we're oftentimes, yourself included, you know, interviewed in radio and television by radio and television stations around the world. So anything, you know, what you're doing to break through the you know, the information back constraints is greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Rick, many, many thanks. I've got enough time to say join us over the weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Friday is always at 11 a.m. Rick, you're one of my role models. You inspire me. We're in this together. There's no question. I look forward to having you back. And, of course, make it a regular habit.